Dave Colombo.
Hey!
How we doing, man?
Sorry. Every time I've got a mic, I go into, like, radio DJ. No. I'm like, it's 10 past the big hour. I'm so sorry. I apologize.
No, you're fine. It was funny because we were just, like, talking normally before, and then I loved, like, that we are back, baby.
It's the when we do my podcast, which I do over Zoom,
yeah.
It's hilarious how the host and me, it's on Zoom. There's no live audience, but I'm like, and hello, everybody, because you just... The hosting energy takes over.
Sure, and, but what I love too, and the podcast is called Off the Mark, and it's where you review excellent movies with horrible reviews. It's hilarious. And you were kind enough to have me on. We did The Godfather together.
Yeah.
And we were talking about it off mic, but that was actually my first podcast I ever got to do. So it was awesome. A wonderful gift to me. So I thank you so much for that.
Oh,
go back
great.
And listen.
Yeah, you were great.
That means the world.
On.
And I love Mick Andrews as well. He's so funny.
He's the best.
Just, yeah. Oh, and the dynamic you guys have is fantastic, but it's a wonderful podcast. But what it gives that air of professionalism to the podcast, which I love, which is like, it's like when you because when you first sign on, it's like, this is very like ragtag. We're just kind of going into the episode. You're like, hello, everybody. And you do such a wonderful job of writing jokes for the intro.
Yeah.
Which I so appreciate as a fan. Like you just did the bird cage and you go, you go fairy dust, fairy dust, fairy dust. It's like part of the intro.
But it's funny when like, you know, it's the same thing as a comedian when like you want to workshop a joke.
Yeah.
But the people that you're talking to are not comics and they don't know that's what's happening. So they try to like interject and you're like, shut up, let me finish.
Yeah.
And that's what'll happen on the podcast where it's like, I have a great line and my wife, Laura, will be like, now wait a minute. And I'm like, I haven't done the punchline yet. Come on.
And Laura High, who's another wonderful comedian.
She's phenomenal, but she ruins my joke.
What is it like, Dave? I'm always curious because I'll have to cut this out, but I'm actually proposing next week to my girlfriend, which
Yay,
is amazing.
Congrats.
Thank you so much, Dave.
But
what is it like being married to a comedian? Because my partner is not in that scene at all.
It's hilarious because I was just having this conversation with a comic the other day. It has its challenges.
Sure.
As long as you have an honest conversation with them about, like, my success is your success is my success.
Right.
Right now, she's crushing it. And she is, like, headlining all over the place, and she's letting me feature. I have no problem riding her coattails.
That's, yeah.
Her, like I get a free hotel, and I get to feature on the road, and there's no problem to it. And I feel like there's some comics who are kind of like, oh, I don't know. Are you okay with like, what are you kidding me? Like, it's all the money is going to the broken water heater in the house. So like,
you're coming from the same budget. Like,
right.
No, 100%. And like, you get to tour with your best friend.
Right.
That's what everybody wants.
And there's something about like, I do understand the energy of like, oh no, like it can get a lot. But the alternative that I always see, and I don't know if this is your story or the story that you have that you've seen with other comics, but like they're either dating or married to someone who is so not in the comedy world that they don't appreciate what the job is.
Sure.
I need to break plans to go to a spot tonight because it's an important spot. Why? Because I have to. Because this isn't a hobby.
Right.
This is literally my job.
And I'm so fortunate in that sense because she gets that.
Good.
She is, and which is the most important thing. And she's so supportive of me to the point where I actually just left my job in November because it was causing me so much stress. And they were very generous, I will say. They were like, we can offer you a leave of absence. And I was like, that's very enticing. I can take my 1 or 2 month mental break that I need because I was close to breaking down. What happened was we went away for vacation. We had a wedding in Italy, which was great. We had a great time. And I come right back. Yeah, it was great.
Where'd you go?
We went to Tuscany.
Nice.
Yeah, so it was beautiful. We went for our friend's wedding. It was great. We come back and it was one of those vacations, unfortunately, where I just didn't get to relax because I knew while I was on vacation, like I wasn't working on the things I wanted to work on, and I had to go back to that office that was kind of, you know, taking over my life.
Yeah.
And so the first day back, thankfully I got to work from home, but I had this breakdown, and I was like, I couldn't do this. So, you know, I told them I quit that week, and then they offered me that leave of absence, and I was like, that's pretty enticing. I think I'm going to tell Taylor I'm going to take it. She was like, don't take it, which is I look back and I'm like, that was the best advice. Because she goes, you're going to be right back in the same position you were.
I can't tell you. I was working as a server for like 13 years. And the restaurant that I was working at, Laura and I were dating at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it went under and the nearest one of the chain was like in Jersey.
Okay.
And so I was like, well, I guess I'm gonna like have to take three buses an hour and a half. And she's like, or commit to this career you want. And at the time I was like, honey, money is an issue. It's not that simple, honey.
Yeah.
I'm so glad it's the exact same where it's just like, oh, it really paid to listen to her.
And this is why, like, you need significant others.
Yeah.
And I think for obviously many men out there, you know, no matter sexuality and things like that, this isn't a gender thing, but for men specifically with women, they bring up the or. And yeah. It doesn't even occur to you. Like with my girlfriend too, she was like, you know, you don't have to be miserable.
Yeah,
you can
yeah.
take care of yourself and do things for yourself.
A lot of times you just need somebody outside of yourself.
Yes.
It's the same thing when you've been working on a joke too long and like you've completely lost the setup and like you've worked it so much that you're no longer actively giving the information in the setup that the audience needs for the punchline.
Yeah, totally.
And you need someone to go like, you didn't even tell us this part right. of this, and you're like, oh, okay.
And does that help having like a partner that can help you work out material? Like, do you guys write together?
That is such a
that's awesome.
It's a can of worms.
Yeah,
because she is giving and loving and respectful, and she takes notes, and I don't. And it's the hardest thing in the world because she's right there. And it drives both of us crazy because like there's lines that I'll give her that she'll use on stage that will do well. And I'm sitting there going like,
yeah, exactly.
In the crowd. And then there's lines that she gives me that do well. And I'm kind of like, oh, she wrote that one.
I know. Yeah. And it's funny because Gabe Molica, who's done the podcast, mm-hmm. said my favorite thing in the world. He's like, all of your best lines come from other people.
So of course.
Once you accept that, it's like, it's fine.
The first time you're like, am I even a comic?
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Yeah. But with the writing thing, I'm trying to get better, and she is very, very patient with me. But, like, I honestly have this, like, Woody Allen-esque, like, it'd be much better if you just did it the way I wrote it, you know, kind of mindset.
Sure.
And she's kind of like, Dave, like,
yeah.
Have you noticed that I took four of your suggestions and every single thing that I pitched you, you were like, no, that's not it.
Right,
it's like,
right. It's yeah.
I'm literally like a starving artist and I'm getting better, but it's tough. But we try to write together all the time because it's just nice to have somebody holding you accountable.
Yeah, totally. And you guys do wonderful sketches together too on social media.
Thank you.
Oh my God. I'm such a fan. And Dave, one thing you do, and I love so much, is News O'Clock. One of
you.
My favorite things you do on social media, and the Republican goalposts,
mm-hmm.
which are just constantly, I mean, you're such an incredible writer. And we talked about it before because you grew up such a big Simpsons fan.
Yeah.
Like, you, I remember we said offline before the podcast started, you wanted to be in that writer's room or a similar writer's room. But we're talking about the landscape now. It just doesn't exist anymore.
No.
Yeah.
No, it's, I grew up. Like watching shows and going like those writers who came up with that writer's room is the dream, is what I want to do and is where
right.
I want to be. And it's just every year less, fewer and fewer. I'll get coffee with a comedian who's like written for the Tonight Show, and they're just like, get out, man. And like they fought in a war, and I'm just kind of like, no, I'm sure it's delightful. And they're like, you know, it's just not that world anymore.
No.
But and I guess it is all online now, and it is all like self-created content.
Sure.
But I feel like we're in that weird space where we haven't figured out how to monetize and make it professional yet.
Mm-hmm.
So like my career is happening after late night talk show rooms, but before we all unionize and become the next big thing. So it's kind of the Wild West right now.
No, totally. And well, let me ask you, because I wrestle and I go back and forth with this idea all the time. Would you rather come up now or back when the period we're talking about?
Oh, man. I mean, like what, like the 80s or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, or even 90s.
It's
yeah.
weird because you hear the stories like Jerry Seinfeld will like, you know, be like, back in the 70s, you know, they just needed comics. Like you do comedy 6 months, you're headlining at the Strip. And,
right, yeah.
And it was such a different world where like it was, I think it was harder to make it then because there weren't a lot of people to that were given opportunities,
mm-hmm.
but I really appreciate that now there's like an audience for everybody.
Totally.
You do what you love enough on TikTok and you'll get a fan base of people who are like consistently liking everything that you do.
Yep.
And it's you know, nobody is going to ever be the next Richard Pryor or, you know.
No.
Like, those don't exist anymore, but you will be somebody's favorite thing.
No, sure.
Which is kind of, I kind of like that.
No, absolutely. And I think, too, it's like, I think back, we were talking about it before the podcast, but like Gary Goldman gives advice. It's good when you're not for everybody.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that really sticks with you because, like you said, you just keep doing your thing. And you post enough online. And that's what we're trying to do with this, man. We're just trying to find an audience who, you know, can just, we're just trying to bring people up. That's all we're trying to do here.
No, and I love the idea of this. This is thanks, phenomenal.
Dave.
I'm so excited.
No, and I think this is a good transition. Like, let's get into it, Dave. So you told me a little bit about it, but I'd love if you just want to dive right in, tell us about it.
I mean, there's a lot of backstory, and it's so funny how, like, we're so upbeat for the whole first part of it. And now I'm going to be like, my mom died of cancer. But, so I grew up in Florida. My mom lived there with me. My mom divorced my dad. I was raised by both of them, but my mom was a goofball. She was the reason I found stand-up comedy. She was the funniest person in the world.
I love that.
Never took anything seriously. Like, if a car backfired, she would make like a, ooh, excuse me, like she farted joke. Like, any opportunity to laugh.
Yeah.
While still being like a human being and, like, you know, correcting me when I needed correcting and being a mother. So I went off to college in L.A. I'm out in L.A. trying to be an actor. I fell back in love with my high school sweetheart from Florida.
Okay.
And convinced her to drive and move with me out into LA.
From Florida. Wow.
Because I was already out there and we just kind of reconnected. And I convinced her to pack up all of her stuff, leave everything, and move out to LA and become engaged. And we got a house together and we were living together and we were starting to settle down and buying stuff together and building a life. And I was trying to be an actor and it was not going well. And got a call from my mom, said she felt a little tingle in her head.
Okay.
And she was like, just letting you know. And I'm like, cool. I'm 25 and I'm barely listening right now.
No. Yeah.
And it got worse. And turns out it ended up being lung cancer. She had smoked for her whole life, mm-hmm. that metastasized into her brain, and she had a brain tumor.
And what year is this, Dave? Like,
this
around
is around like 2009, 2010.
Okay.
I'm in my mid-20s.
Gotcha. So you have this house with your girlfriend at the time.
Yeah, fiance.
And you get the fiance.
Yeah.
And you get this call from your mom that it's getting worse.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it got bad quick. I went out and visited where she was in Florida for some like, not chemotherapy yet, but like some operations, and just to kind of be there and check in with her and help her out and everything. And then she would get a little better and then not, and then worse, and then a little better and then worse. So it started to get really bad, and my family on my mom's side basically let me know it's you need to come out. This is like, and we don't know how long. This isn't a visit kind of thing, but you need to be here. And I was like, absolutely. So I'm my mid-20s, so I don't even really know what to say to my fiance, or like, you know, I'm going to go. And she's like, I'm coming with you. And I'm like, really? And she's like, yeah, idiot. Like, you know, like we're,
I love this.
We're that's a team.
That's such 25 year old logic.
Well, it's like, look, I'm still in the mindset of like, I do everything myself and I don't want to be a bother. And it's like, what do you think fiance means? You know, like, oh yeah, yes. Go off and be with your dying mom while I hang out here in LA, you know? So We packed up. This is before I was doing stand up, so I was literally just trying to be an actor.
Right,
so I didn't really
right.
have I didn't have much that I was leaving besides.
And how are you feeling at this point too? Because are you feeling scared? Obviously, I mean, you were very close with your mom.
Yeah, incredibly. But I was also, I think I was at the age where like I hadn't really experienced any significant loss in my life.
Okay.
So it was hard to have anything to compare it to.
Sure.
So I wasn't really thinking. I was numb, but I wasn't like fully understanding of what was going to happen.
And that's what makes it 10 times harder when it's your mom as your first loss. Like, I lost my great aunt when I was 14, and she was like a second mom to me.
Yeah.
Which is hard. But obviously, I think looking back, that's the moment I point to where it's like, that's where I learned to deal with grief and stuff like that. So this is that for you.
Right.
Amplified by the fact that it's your mother.
Before you have that that first experience, you can't really compartmentalize what, you know, what it's going to be like when she's bedridden, when she's not responsive, when you're feeding her morphine, when you're, you know, like when all of these things are happening,
sure.
That's not in your head yet. You're like, mom's not feeling well. So
gotta get home.
So we packed up. This is what we had. We packed up everything in her Saturn truck, her like minivan. I don't even know what it would be called, like a SUV kind of thing. Her dog, which was also my dog, but her dog that she had brought from Florida.
Sure.
Her cat and another cat that we had gotten that was pregnant.
Oh boy.
So two cats, one of them pregnant, and her dog. And all of our stuff, we packed up and we drove across the country because we had no money.
Yeah.
And we were literally like, what is the cheapest way that we can do this? And it's literally just to pack up everything. We stopped off at Motel Sixes on the way, like literally the dingiest places we could find.
Okay. How long did the journey take?
A couple days. I mean, we drove pretty much like into the night and then would you know. And we made like little stops to like make ourselves feel better emotionally about what was happening. We would like be like, hey, it's the Petrified Forest National Park in New Mexico. That's a cool looking rock. That one's shiny. I guess we should keep going.
I don't mean to laugh so hard, but it's hard because it's like it's the underlying current of the reason you're there,
right?
Which is to go, unfortunately, to your sick mother,
right? So and like every detour is, you know, taking time, but there was also just kind of like we need sanity.
Sure,
for this.
of course. And then I'm just imagining you're like, it's the world's largest ball of yarn. Like,
we found one. I don't know if it's still there, but there was like it's a bunch of old cars half sticking out of the ground.
Oh god!
And it's like off of Route 66 or something. And it's like, and there's spray paint for you to just, you know.
Yeah, literally.
And we've made our mark, and then just keep going. Like, what is America? What is America? So, yeah. So we drove all the way across the country. We get there, and she's not great. The last time I had seen her, she was slow but responsive and chill.
Sure.
When I showed up this time, and I apologize in advance if I literally can't. I'm very emotional with this.
It's okay. This is a very safe space. So.
She goes, it's so great to see you. Did you know that my son Dave is coming as well?
Oh,
she didn't
God.
Know it was me.
Yeah.
And that was when we got there.
Yeah.
So it just got worse from there. She was already in hospice. We lived with my uncle, my two aunts, their dog, my fiance, our dog, and the two cats, and the second cat ended up giving birth.
Oh, God.
Like there. It was just a madhouse.
Right. How many animals are in that house now? How many kittens?
I think it was like 5 or 6 kittens. Oh, it was crazy. There was so much going on.
Yeah.
It was stressful for everybody. It wasn't a great situation. And I, the whole time, I had told my fiance, when this is over, I don't know how long this is going to take. I don't know what this is going to be, but I'm letting you know, just to say this, I do want to go back. I am not done trying to be an actor.
Right.
We are in Pensacola, Florida, my hometown. There's nothing there.
Of course. And I will say, you were 25 at the time too. I mean, that's a very, I think, mature thing to set expectations. And to say this is still on the table. This is what I'm trying to do.
I think that might have been the one mature thing that I did. like I have no, I don't know if you're this way. I have like very little connection to like me from even 10 years ago. Like the actions I took.
Oh, I completely agree with you. I am even 4 years ago.
Right.
My God,
like,
yes.
I don't recognize, and I know that I have to take responsibility for that person's actions, and I need to apologize if I had done something. But like I have friends that like, they still hold themselves accountable for the stuff they did in high school as like, yeah, that was me. And I'm like,
no, it's
different guy.
100%. And there's this great quote. I forget who it's attributed to, but it's that if you're not cringing at yourself from every 5 years, you're not growing.
That's a great...
Oh, my God, I think about that all the time. Yeah, but I'm the same way, Dave, absolutely.
I don't know if that's genuinely a good quote or just a quote that I needed to hear to, like, justify... Like, oh, great. I'm going to write that down. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to put that on my mirror.
It is one of my favorites, yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's good. Yeah. Okay.
So now you're 25, and you say to her, I'm going to go back to L.A., and I still want to be an actor.
Yeah, and you know...
Is she artistic at all, or...?
Yeah, very much so, nice. But she was kind of like, you know, all her whole family is in Florida. She left a lot to come with me to L.A.
Yeah.
And so we're there... We need to get jobs because we need to, like, kind of pay our way as much as we can. I mean, obviously, we're staying in my uncle's house, but, like, we need to start paying rent as soon as possible. Right. So we immediately start going out, putting applications out there. We were restaurant servers, so we were kind of doing that. And we both immediately got jobs at the high-end Jackson's Steakhouse.
Ooh.
In Pensacola, Florida, like the fanciest fine dining establishment in Pensacola. My favorite story was, like, I'm always very nervous with a new job. I don't know if you're that way, where it's like, I hate being like the one slowing everybody down.
Yeah.
But I was like shadowing, and the guy I was shadowing, if you've never been in the server industry, like, you follow somebody and you're the trainee, and they call it shadowing. And the guy was like, there is nothing that we can't do at Jackson Steakhouse. Remember that. Whatever the guest needs, whatever the guest wants, we can do it because we're Jackson Steakhouse. And I was like, got it.
This isn't Johnson's down the block.
No.
This is Jackson's.
And I was like, you know, oh, got it. So then the first table I had on my own, she's looking at the menu, this old woman, and she just goes like, I don't want anything here. Can you just make me like a salad of field greens? And I was like, great. And I walk up to the chef in the back, and I'm like, she just wants a salad of field greens. And he's like, I can't do that. And I'm just like...
immediately going back on everything they told
me. Like, literally, like, I thought this was Jackson's Steakhouse. But it was funny because, like, I don't know, if you've only ever done, like, casual fine dining or casual dining, fine dining is a world that is, like, it's completely different.
Mm-hmm.
One time, I don't know what it's called, whatever you brew coffee into,
wouldn't it just be a pot or something?
Yeah, like that pot.
Yeah.
You're supposed to then pour that in a stainless steel silver cruet or whatever, the technical,
sure,
really nice, fancy Downton Abbey style thing. That's what you're supposed to pour it into to take it out to the guests.
Oh, okay. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. One day... I forgot, and I took the coffee pot out to refill coffee, and the other servers were like,
get them! They just tackle you.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, I get it. I know I screwed up. The guests know this is what the coffee's going
into,
right?
Yeah, that's not, it's not like a bad, you know, I get it, but like, come on.
They've seen this before. They're not going to be like, what is that, you know? I will never, oh my God. So we got the jobs, and my mom started to get worse. She started to become completely unresponsive and bedridden, and we were just taking turns, giving her medication. She's already kind of on her way out. And right as we finally get enough money together to put a down payment on renting a house, we found a 3-bedroom house. I don't know why we needed 3 bedrooms, but we went for 3-bedroom house, and brought all of our stuff in. I mean, we had like big IKEA furniture that we had broken down to reassemble.
Okay.
So like a lot of what we had in LA, we had brought all the way out here. So we lived in a house, and as soon as we kind of moved in, literally got ourselves comfortable, my mom passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, it's the funniest story I can imagine. It's the worst job in the world because she was an organ donor.
Mm-hmm.
So I was, I forget the term, but I was the one who was the executor of all of her stuff afterwards. And they needed to talk to me literally minutes after she died,
okay,
to talk to me about her organs. And so a woman on the phone had to be like, so sorry for your loss. Did she have AIDS?
Oh,
you know,
my
like she
God.
Had to ask all of these personal questions. Was she a prostitute? all of these like legal things, these health things that they needed to know.
Yeah.
So that they could get the organs quickly and get them to somebody, which is the most beautiful, wonderful. And I was like on the phone going like, you are nailing this job. Because she was so respectful with the way
really
she did
nice
it.
To hear.
I was like, this is a hard job you have. And she's like, I'm so sorry for your loss. I can't believe what you must be going through right now. How many sexual partners did she have in the last year?
Do you do this on stage?
No.
Oh,
I've
Dave.
Never been able to figure out how to do any of this on stage.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, never.
That, to have your mother pass away, which, oh, my God. And then seconds later to be asked, was she a prostitute?
Yeah, I mean, literally, because it's like they need to know. It's like these organs are getting cold, you know? And it's,
oh
and
God.
I couldn't believe, I was just like literally just like, thank you. No, thank you so much. You know, like.
I love that about you, Dave, because in that moment, you're still able to see that really nice part in that other person where you're like, I really appreciate what you're doing.
When you see someone crushing a job, my wife got her dad a birthday gift to go see like catacombs in New York City. There was some like catacombs under a church or something, and so we went. Swear to God, this will make sense. and we went, and the tour guide, it's like 20 degrees, snowing, and there's like four of us, us and like four other people. And this tour guide is crushing it with the jokes, the hammy tour guide jokes. And I'm like leaning over to Laura, like, you know, we're comedians. We would not be able to do like this is the like what comedians complain about in terms of an audience. Try outside in the rainy snow for six people with sirens going by, and he's crushing it.
Oh,
so we let him know. We were like, dude, you're really good at what you do.
Oh,
you
that's know? So nice. Was there a part of you, too, that was like, I'm jealous of this stage
So
time.
Jealous. I was just like, oh, that, but I was like, that's a good line.
That's good.
Oh, man. And it was all borderline racist, because he's kind of like, you know, of course, back then, this was more of an Italian part of town, and you know Italians, and I'm just kind of going like, yeah,
everybody else in the tour is like laughing. You're like, okay,
like,
it's that kind of group.
We're getting there a little tight,
That kind of room.
We're right on the line. We're right on the line. I'm Italian, and you're right, but still right on the line.
Oh
you know?
My God, that is so funny.
Anyway, so my mom passed away, and at the time, just to like exist in an artistic space. I think I had gotten cast in two plays. It was either one or two. I can't remember.
Right after.
Kind of around that time.
Okay.
And they knew my situation with my mom and everything.
Sure.
So I had the job. We had the new place. And I'm cast in two plays. And almost immediately, I'm feeling this void. I'm feeling this emptiness. I'm spinning wheels in Pensacola. It's not where I want to be.
Yeah.
It's not what I want to be doing. And my fiance is being incredibly patient and incredibly like, what do you need? She's doing everything that she can. And, you know, I very quickly was like, we got to figure out how to get back.
And so the plays are in Pensacola?
Yeah.
Or? Oh, they are.
Yeah,
okay.
These are
gotcha.
Like, we're like halfway through. And I am such a... I love stand-up, but my first love is the theater. And,
it's so interesting.
And,
yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
But it's like the idea of quitting a play is like putting everybody through that, of trying to get like a new person to come
in
is like crazy.
And I imagine, too, I don't have an acting background, but I imagine, too, for a production, it changes everything because it's how the cast interacts. It's the chemistry and everything.
Yeah.
So, I mean, take us through. Were they understanding of the situation at all?
Well,
or?
I wanted to, like, finish the plays, finish what we're doing, maybe even save some money here in Pensacola and finish the lease, but then go back to L.A. And my fiance was like, I don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
She wanted
to stay.
Yeah. Because she wanted kids, she wanted to settle down, and this was a town, and it's very, very strange because a lot of the fight that was the end of the relationship is a blur to me.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a steel trap of a memory.
Mm-hmm.
So in years since, we our relationship has been okay, and we're friends now, and her memory of the conversation and the fight that we had is very different than what I imagine I would have said.
Sure.
But again, I just finished telling you, like, I don't associate with who I was when I was a kid.
1,000%. You know? Dave. And I think about this all the time because I think about the relationships I had in my early 20s and mid-20s where, you know, I did so many things wrong and I said so many terrible things. You know, I'll be vulnerable and I'll give this example that I'm really ashamed of, which is that I had a girlfriend in college, and I remember it was towards the end of our relationship. We broke up later this night, but I didn't know how to set boundaries in terms of calling me, and she would call me a lot. But what I didn't realize is she needed that, you know, for a relationship and things like that. So she walked the block from, it was very close by. I think she lived two blocks away from her apartment to mine. And she called me and she said, I want you to stay on the phone with me, you know, just because I feel unsafe. And at that point, I didn't know how to handle my emotions. So I got mad and I yelled at her and I hung up the phone, which it's like, you know, I look back at that. I feel very ashamed about that.
Yeah.
But, you know, to that point, it's, you know, but we talk about growth and stuff like that.
That's one of those things where in the moment you feel validated in how you feel. And then you look back on it and you go, like, I can't defend that.
No,
like, I can't.
I absolutely cannot. And it haunts me. And it's not because, God forbid, something happened. I would never be able to forgive myself. But, you know, the good thing is that we're looking back and we're recognizing that, because there are plenty of people out there who just keep living on the same way.
Well,
you know,
yeah, I think that we all, especially as comedians, the whole idea is that you are in control, that you are never, if you show weakness on stage, you're done. So you have to always be, you know, powerful.
Yeah.
So to not let that seep into your life outside of comedy, where you can acknowledge that you were wrong, where you can acknowledge that you're not proud of something and have genuine regret. I don't know if you're the kind of person, like, when people are like, no regrets.
Oh, okay.
What are you out of your mind? A lot of regrets.
All of them.
I'm happy as hell with how my life has gone. I love where my regrets led me. I wouldn't trade them for the world.
That's really beautiful. I love that. Yeah.
It doesn't mean that, like, no regrets.
Yeah, like, it's like,
really?
I did everything I wanted to do.
Nothing you would have zigged instead of zagged. Nothing. I mean, but because they're the type of people that be like, well, then I wouldn't have this and this and this. And it's like, dude, if you got a drink of water on at 2 p.m. instead of 2:05 p.m., your entire life is different.
I think about,
like,
that all the time.
Chaos theory means that, like, everything, what you have right now is only because of every little thing that you did.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. So in the fight that we had where we broke up, she remembers it. Obviously she remembers it from her perspective, being I was being very unreasonable.
Mm-hmm.
I was being very selfish. And of course, you want to be the hero of your own story. I remember how I was feeling. I remember what I thought I said,
mm-hmm.
what I thought I was. The number of times where it's like, what I'm trying to communicate is a complicated feeling that's coming off that's like, screw you.
Yeah,
you know?
Even now I do that all the time where it's like, you know, I'll just be like, even if I get into a fight with my girlfriend now and I'm like, I think I'm handling this very maturely. She'll be like, you are not.
Not
this
in a little bit.
Nope.
Yeah. So I have a blur of what actually transpired because it was very traumatic. But it ended with the end of the relationship, right there in this bedroom in a house that we had just gotten a lease on, mm-hmm. in Florida, a place neither of us really wanted to be or thought we would end up. And she is she's a no nonsense kind of person where she's like, you got to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I got to go. This isn't we still live together for 6 months while you figure it out. We this needs to be done. We need to exit ourselves from the situation. So I packed up in like two suitcases what I had with literally just the dream of going back to LA to continue to be a struggling artist.
And I want to just stop for a second because I want to acknowledge the two losses that you're suffering now at this point, which is that you were packing up after your mother had just passed away and you just lost your fiance.
Yeah.
And you're, do you remember that moment packing up?
Yeah, I don't remember the moment packing up, but I remember the walk that I took, mm-hmm. and I called my dad, and he also was like, you got to go. Like, you got to get out of that house. Like, he was worried more about my safety because I am so a non-confrontational person in so many ways that when the big confrontations happen, I don't know necessarily how, like, dangerous they are.
Sure, yeah.
And she would never have done anything. We wouldn't have ended up on a true crime show or anything like that. But, like, he didn't.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's like, hey, got to get on Netflix somehow. And, like, yeah, he was like, I don't trust this situation.
Yep.
Get out of there. So I remember walking, like, up and down my new neighborhood and just packing up my stuff.
I'm so glad you had someone to call in that moment.
Yeah.
Because the only thing worse is, I imagine, just you completely alone in that situation.
Yeah. I mean, I would have thought I was thriving because I don't.
25-year-old logic.
25-year-old logic. But it's also like, oh, don't mind me. I'm okay. I don't want to bother anybody with my call that my mom just died and I lost my fiance. Why would I bother you with that information? You could be sleeping, you know?
100%. And that's the whole, I don't want to be a burden. Yeah. I don't want to bother anybody. And it's, you know, sometimes you need to bother people.
This is one of those once-in-a-lifetime calls where I need somebody.
You get one every 25 years, and this is the one.
And I'm better at that now of kind of going, like, hey, I need to be a little selfish right now.
Which is, by the way, if you're ever in a situation where you want to open up with that, that's what you should say.
Absolutely.
100%. Because that'll tell the other person that you need this, and that's 100%.
That also helps with, I love, like, to you, the listener.
Yeah, hello.
That also helps with just relationships in general. With my wife all the time, there are times where I'm a little needy emotionally, mm-hmm. or I'm a little standoffish emotionally, or I am of a state, and being able to communicate that clearly, and because it's okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes we're all hungry. Sometimes we're all pissy. Sometimes we're all, like, needy, and it's like, I need you to put the phone down right now and give me attention.
Yeah.
It's literally like a dog.
That's the way to do it. And I struggle with this too, man, because we have a dog, and the dog has had so many trips to the vet to the point, thank God we have pet insurance, because she had surgery that was $5,000, all this stuff. And it really, like, she's been so many times, and it's a money thing.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's just so expensive, but she's a sick dog and she needs it. She's a rescue, has all these health issues. And just now, whenever I hear the word vet, it triggers me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's for no reason, I will just, like, we were out to dinner the other night having a lovely time, and I was like, you know, she had something on her head that had gotten bigger. And I was like, oh my God, now we have to take her, and it's going to cost X amount of money, and whatever. So I'm spiraling, and I ruin the dinner.
Yeah.
And it's just one of those, I need to in that moment, and I'm trying, and she knows I'm trying, and she's very patient with me, but I need to take that step back and say, look, this is really stressing me out. I either just need 5 minutes to cool down, or we can, like, talk about it and be whatever. You know what I mean? So
it's so you and I are very, like, you keep saying things, and I'm like, that's literally my exact experience. There are moments and there are things that are triggers for you that you don't have to control them and beat them.
Yeah.
But if you can at least be aware of them,
mm-hmm.
mine, very similar to that, is anytime I spend a big amount of money, if you then right afterwards, like if I just put down $1,000 for a computer,
mm-hmm.
and you were to be like, hey, could you spot me for, like, a coffee? I'll get you back next time. I go into stress mode because I just spent this money.
Yep.
And even if I have it, it's not even that, like, well, I'm destitute now. Mm-hmm. It's literally like my brain could only handle the $1,000 that I just spent.
1,000%. And what's funny, sorry, Dave.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it's funny you bring up money as the example, because that for so much of is a trigger for me as well. And then I try to remember, funny enough, that we were talking, I went to an Italy wedding last year, which was beautiful. And I spoke with one of the people at the wedding, and he said something I try to remember all the time, which is that, look, man, the money will come back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because when I think of those instances where it's like, you know, you spent the $1,000 on the computer, 4 months later, were you thinking about that $1,000? Probably not.
No.
And you definitely weren't thinking about the coffee you got. So it's, but I, it's such an easy source of stress.
Was that an Italian?
No, was, no. Okay. He was, no, no, because they're, it was her side. So they're 100% Polish.
Okay.
So yeah, but still European and you know,
it's,
that, yeah.
It's, what's that energy? For, yes. For our honeymoon, we went to Italy and.
Oh,
and,
wait, where?
We went to Rome, Florence, and then Venice.
Beautiful. Oh my God.
And just as an American, like being in a, in an energy that's like, everything's fine. Oh. Just relax. We would go and get cappuccinos, and we would just sit there, and they'd bring the cappuccinos, and then they wouldn't come back for like 45 minutes.
Oh, it takes forever. Yeah. It takes forever there.
And me, and the, as the New Yorker, I'm like, what's going on? like, and it's just a different energy. And that whole, like, the money will come back, don't worry, yeah, is such a wonderful speed that I need to...
100%, yeah. And I agree. And it's funny you mention that because whenever I go to Europe or any sort of place like that, I'm always like, what are you guys pursuing? Like, what are you, where is your high gear? I don't understand. Yeah. Why isn't everybody trying to pursue acting or small business or like something?
I think it's also just New York and Jersey
energy.
That's
true too.
When I go back to Florida, anytime I visit, I'm not even off the runway to the gangplank to get off the plane, and I realize like I just shoulder checked three people because I'm used to walking 10 miles an hour.
And by the way, they're all really nice about it. They're like, "Oh, sorry,
yeah,
I was in your way."
Oh, excuse me. Oh, I'm sorry.
Geez. Oh
yeah,
my God.
Yeah, and I'm like, I gotta. You forget the energy because you have to have this energy
totally.
Where we live or you die.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, it is but for survival.
Yeah.
You 100% need to. Oh, my God. Wait, but I do want to get back. Okay, so now you so you go back to L.A.
So I go back to L.A. I don't have a place to live and I have two suitcases.
Mm-hmm.
And hoo boy.
Did you drive back or did you fly back? Because it was her car,
back.
Right? You flew back. Okay.
Yeah, I flew back. There is nothing that makes you like comfortable downsizing later in life than you got two suitcases. What are you taking?
Yeah.
Everything, the years of IKEA trips that we had taken together, she got all of the furniture. I love how I'm like, she got the furniture.
Yeah, right.
Like, I literally ripped her out of Florida into LA
sure.
and then to Florida
no,
and
I understand.
Then left. But like, like I am well aware that of my complicity in what went down, but like she kept all of the stuff, and I just took like two suitcases, and it's hilarious because I had like three big Tupperwares of important papers and stuff that are like big stuff that she just kept, and she ended up, this is how amazing she is, she carried those everywhere else she went for the next like 10 years.
Wow.
She brought them with her. She got married, lives in a completely different state,
yeah,
still had them.
Wow.
And eventually was like, can I send these to you?
Oh my God.
And sent them to me in New York. And
that's,
I went and
incredible.
Picked them up at the Greyhound station.
That's a really beautiful sentiment, because I think it really shows there wasn't animosity. Like, or I don't know, I don't mean to speak or speculate, but it's just a beautiful thing that she knew they would be important to you, so she didn't throw them away.
She is a very beautiful soul who, it almost transcends the idea of like romance or this is what you, she's like a mama bear who takes on everybody.
Oh,
and if she loves you, she loves you.
That's really sweet.
And even what we went through and even what happened and even the fact that I hurt her and she hurt me does not change the fact that I know that I could call her if I needed
to.
That's
really beautiful.
I mean, in the years since, I've visited her and stayed with her at her house. I've met her daughter. I've hung out with her husband.
Wow.
Like, we have a great relationship.
Yeah.
But at the time, I had, like, two suitcases, and I moved back to L.A. and just moved in with friends from college and lived on their couch.
And these friends from college, were they pursuing acting as well?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's how many people in the apartment?
Like three.
Like
yeah.
three people pursuing acting. You're living on the couch. And how long were you there for?
Year and a half,
about. A year and a half, okay.
I had my car. My dad gave me a car that he lived in like Palmdale, like an hour north of L.A. So he was there, but I needed to be in L.A. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like I'm homeless. I could have just gone an hour north and lived with my dad.
Sure.
But I wanted to be in L.A. So I lived in the heart of L.A. on the couch, and they were so sweet. I mean, we're just bros. It's just do what you got to do, man. And I'm like, you sure you don't need anything? If you ever bring in a girl home, just let me know. I'll get out of here.
Put a sock on the door. We
were all nerds, so there was no hey, could you peace out for a minute? We were playing Settlers of Catan on the table.
Yeah. So
that was what we were doing.
Do you look back at that time fondly?
I do, weirdly. It was aggressively nomadic and probably a little not the best for my work ethic,
mm-hmm.
because I kind of just forgot about acting, even though I came back to pursue
act.
That.
That's really interesting.
It was more like I kind of just started working. Well, when you're living on a couch and you have no money,
mm-hmm.
your primary focus is get a job, get your job back, make some money and just get a paycheck kind of going in.
Yeah.
So I lived like that for a very, very long time, to a point where I got a subscription for Planet Fitness and would shower there because mm-hmm. our bathroom wasn't always available, and worked and went back and did karaoke right near the restaurant that I worked at, and literally no women in my life, nobody, my folks weren't really paying attention. My dad and my stepmom, I wasn't really asking them for help, and I was really just kind of just being a kind of a recluse a little bit.
It's such an interesting period to me, because here I am. I'm assuming that you're going to tell me that you were auditioning and you're doing all these things in LA, but it seems like a period where, not to say everything was on pause, but that you were kind of just living and just. I mean, did you discover anything about yourself during that time?
The hero of your own story. Let me put a positive spin on it. Yeah, I learned a lot. No, I learned that when the person living in the room on the couch that you're staying on, when they move out and you get to move into the room and you have walls, it's a completely different world. When you live on a couch for a year, and then all of a sudden you have a room, you're like, oh, that's what I learned. No.
Well, it makes you appreciate. First of all, I love that you answered. You go, no.
Not at all. Well,
which could also be good in a sense.
Because it's the truth.
Know?
Well, I mean, but I know that the point of the podcast is the growth. And the growth did come.
Sure.
We're not at the growth yet. You asked me about my growth before the growth happened. There was a lot of there was a lot of just spinning wheels and goofing around and doing early YouTube sketches and feeling like I think at the time I was mourning my mom and kind of recalibrating what my life was, because she was such an important part of my life.
Yeah, of course.
But it was manifesting as me not taking advantage of what I came back to do. And I think what it was that acting in Hollywood was not that grind was not fulfilling.
Mm-hmm.
It was an hour and a half on the 405 to go to an audition with my shitty headshot, sit in a room surrounded by a bunch of guys who looked exactly like me.
Yeah.
Walking in and having them go, all right, we'll let you know. And then an hour and a half back.
I the acting thing, because I have a friend who's an actor too, and he was pursuing it for a while, and then also found stand-up.
Mm.
One thing I've never been envious of with actors is it's almost, I'm going to go so far as to say 90% out of your control.
Oh, totally.
It's like you do all the work, you rehearse and everything, but you still need that. You still need a casting director to be in a good mood when you audition, that they like you, and then, it's that part that always kind of kept me from. I could never, and I give people so much credit that do that struggle, because it's a numbers game, it feels like, with auditioning.
Well, with stand-up, there's an immediate response.
Totally,
you know exactly how you're doing.
Yep, exactly.
You know what you got to work on.
Yep.
With acting, you walk in and they're like, no, and we're not going to tell you why. But the best story that I have that I love telling about acting of that, that helped me get out of my head about that is so when you're doing commercial work, there's the client. So like if you're doing a Coke commercial, the Coke company is the client, and they have control over every avenue of the audition process and the shoot itself because they're paying for it.
Right.
And it's very cool because it's like there's a director and there's all of these this crew, but they all kind of have to go like, that was really good, but hold on one sec. What do we think? Okay, we got to do it again. Like, you know, and they like the director loved it, the artist loved it, but the people who are not artsy fartsy at all,
right,
who work for the Coke or whatever it is, are like, no, we want another take.
That's got to be so interesting to have that feedback in real time.
It's like so funny.
Wow.
Because sometimes they're delightful and sometimes they're just like.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And
yeah.
So I auditioned for a commercial and didn't get. I got a callback and I crushed the audition. I crushed the callback. I'm feeling really, really confident. And I'm literally like almost spending the money of the before I even got cast.
Yeah.
And they were like, we're not going to use you for the main part that you auditioned for, but would you like to do background? And I was like, sure, I need the money. I basically spent it. So I did background and I'm sitting there background, just extra work. I'm just literally an office worker in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And I see the guy that they cast for it. And I'm just kind of like, you know,
yeah.
And it's a very different look from me.
Yeah.
And the clients for the product actually go like, can we talk to you for a minute? And I was like, yeah, sure. This is weird. I've never done that before. And they go, we loved your audition. We just wanted you to know that. We thought you were amazing. It was great. We literally just did the last commercial we did was someone who had your type and looked like you. And so we wanted to go in a different direction.
Oh, that's
and
why?
That was so helpful because as an actor you're never part of that conversation.
Yeah,
you did
true.
What you did and you go home and you're thinking about it and then you don't get the call and you're like, what happened?
Well, that's the other thing too, is like that's so out of your control,
right.
and you're still doing great work,
but that's what helped me now, because now I know that those conversations that have nothing to do with the work you did are happening all the time.
Yeah.
And that's helped me ever since with auditions, with stand-up, with like with anything, to not stress about. I mean, all I can do is go in there and give you the best version of
that's
what I got.
That's really good advice.
And
that
if it works and if it happens to coincide with, oh, and we need someone who looks like you.
Yeah.
And there's all of this other stuff happening that you're not part of that you can't control.
That is so helpful, especially because I just did a club audition and they were very nice. They were like, you did have a very strong set, but we just chose to go in a different direction. So I really appreciate that, because that is other stuff that I have no idea what's going on in the background.
So much, because money's involved.
Yeah, that's
it's not about your ego.
Yeah.
It's not about making you feel good.
Right, exactly.
There's money.
I always remember that too, where it's like, especially with like artists and stuff, because of course there is that. Once you introduce money, it becomes a whole different game. Dave, I do just have to ask you, because you mentioned you were doing some YouTube sketches at the time. Did you do the accountant zombie sketch at this time?
No, that was way after.
That was way after.
Yeah,
okay, because
no.
I love that sketch.
I appreciate that. That's my favorite thing I ever wrote.
I think you just reposted it, and
I was
watching it. That is like my. And they just do the cut too.
It got hit on TikTok.
Oh, that's
like,
great.
It got like demonetized and
hit in the bad way.
Yeah,
oh my god,
like sensitive content. And I'm
get
like
out.
the makeup job, was that good on the zombie, you know? Okay. Yeah, no, this is I still have them on Facebook. This is like 2012, like birth of YouTube sketch comedy. We didn't know pacing. We didn't know how to edit. It's literally like the crummiest, like HD, like not even HD, like standard definition.
Yeah.
It's really, but it was good work. I mean, I'm working with my friends from college. My buddy Tom is literally my favorite person in the world.
Is that Tom Eshelman?
No,
different Tom. Okay. Because I love Tom. Tom's great.
Eshelman's great.
Yeah,
he's
so funny.
No, my buddy Tom Fonz, he's literally, met him in, he looks like Rivers Cuomo. Met him in college, day one of college. And you ever see that person? You're like, I want to be your friend.
Hey, yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Like, I know your energy immediately. And I'm like,
It's always great when you just know, like, right off the bat with a person.
Yeah.
Okay, so now, Dave, I do want to... Okay, so here you are acting, auditioning. Where? How do you find stand-up from this point?
So I start... A friend of mine was taking a class, and she was doing a show, and I went to the open mic that she was doing, and I was like, my mom raised me on stand-up. I love stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
Never thought of it as something that I would try or do. But I made a realization as I was watching these terrible open micers at a coffee shop in Santa Monica? No, somewhere in L.A. that, like, holy crap, I respect good stand-up comedians more than I respect good actors.
Wow.
So why am I not pursuing this?
Yeah, that's interesting.
And it was like, this is something, I mean, and it's not something that either or, it's LA, I can do both.
Sure.
So I, at that open mic that I had gone to the previous time, I went with 5 minutes of just garbage that I still have memorized. I still have the whole.
Could you do, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, could you do a joke from your first open mic for
us? Because literally, it's burned in my brain.
Yeah, yeah.
So we have this jerk-off billionaire who has to show how smart he is compared to everybody else. His name is Trump. We have a guy who stole all the money named Madoff. The fastest man alive is named Bolt. Is God just running out of names? Is he like, these are like placeholder names in on a screenplay. Yeah, that'll, like, and it's just, I mean, but like what I just did is 10 times the charisma of like me just going like, hey, so, oh man, I still have it on tape. Here is the joke that I wrote. Oh my God. Okay. The way you hold the microphone tells you what kind of comedian you are. You got this guy who you're going to find out about his dick. And then you've got the esoteric comedian who tells the long-winded jokes that you don't even understand. You guys think if Marcel Duchamp knew how to draw clothes a little better, his cubist masterpiece would have been Prude Descending a Staircase? And I didn't know why they weren't laughing. I had no idea.
I don't understand. Why?
I still bring that joke out when it's... I did that joke at like an art gallery. And even... No.
Oh, no. I was like, that's where you do
the
it.
The one time.
Oh,
no. Yeah.
Damn.
There is nothing funnier than before you have a handle on it.
Yeah.
Don't you wish you could like go back to yourself and just write with yourself in your first
year? Oh, totally. Oh, my God. Yeah.
And just be like, love what you're doing.
Yeah, this is great.
But keep in mind the audience paid to come here.
My God.
And it's not pure self-expression. It's self-expression plus engaging with an audience.
And it's so funny. I love hearing these jokes now, Dave, because you just, I love watching you perform.
Oh, thank you. Love watching you perform.
That means the world coming from you, sincerely. I love this joke you just posted, I think on Instagram or TikTok, where it's... your wife lets you watch WWE wrestling and you go crystal shopping with her. You go, both things that are not real.
I did that. You ever do like the first time and it goes great and then you keep doing it and it's not like every other audience is telling you to keep writing, but you're like, no, but the first audience really liked it.
You guys don't get it.
Yeah, it's really funny. It's walking the line. I got all those jokes confirmed by my wife that like it's okay and everything. Obviously, I want to be careful, but like the idea of like I go to these crystal shops with her and I'm just like,
it's crazy,
honey, this is wonderful that this is for you. I will stand here happily, but I can't.
And I love you saying the joke. You go, I'm going to go over here to the ones that give me patience.
Yeah.
And it's so good.
Yeah.
Oh, it's such a great
joke. That's another one where it's less funny and more like people go,
sure.
Great writing, Dave.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, thank you. Like, I prefer laughs, but I'll take that as well.
Yeah, golf claps from the comedy fans in the back.
It's so funny. I did a thing a while ago, like literally at my fifth anniversary of comedy, where I went back and did side by side of like my first couple of sets and then like later. And then I did it at 10 years too. And it is, it's jarring.
Do you post these online?
Yeah.
Oh, that's why I have to go back and see them. I haven't seen them.
I think the 10-year one is on TikTok and the 5-year one I have is on YouTube. But like what? I did a Hungarian restaurant with a really good HD camera. It was the first bringer I ever did in LA. Mm-hmm. And it's so bad. I bombed. Oh. So it's on Vimeo. Or
okay.
Whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And you just type in David Colombo and it'll come up. And it is so atrocious, but it's a great thing to juxtapose with your like what you're doing now. And it's like, oh, cool, awesome. Has been progress.
Totally, which is so affirming when you go back. Have you ever been tempted to rewrite some of those jokes and then use them in your act now?
Yeah. like at my 5-year anniversary, I went back and did my first set, and it got more laughs than the stuff I was working on at the time at 5 years. And I was like, no. I've been doing this 5 years. My new stuff needs to be doing better.
You're like, don't tell me this. This is
it. Don't be like, oh, this is great new stuff. Did you just write that, Dave? It's like, no, that was my first week of comedy.
And one thing, what I suspect, and I could be wrong, obviously, but one thing I suspect is like, and I'm trying to work on this now, do you think maybe it was that you had the energy and renewed vigor of like, I'm going to do these jokes and I'm going to do them with some excitement because mm-hmm. I want to see like if they land. And I feel like when you do jokes for the first time, there is that subconscious, I want these to work. So I'm going to perform in a certain way where they do, as opposed to like when you're doing jokes that, you know, work, you kind of lose people a little bit.
It's interesting because like the whole idea of like jokes going bad or getting mm-hmm. rotten just because you tell them too much.
Yeah.
It happens. And your explanation must be it, but it's drives me crazy because I don't feel like I'm doing the joke any differently, but there must be something subtle.
I completely agree with you because I had a joke it actually got me because I hosted Eastville sometimes and I used to open with it, which is that I would do this joke about how I was running late to work one day. So I texted my Uber driver and he'd messaged me. I think he meant to message me, I'm on the way, but instead he messaged me, I am the way. And like the first time I did that, Dave, like murdered. Oh my God. It was like, whatever. And then I do this whole thing. It was like, I texted him, where are you? He was like, you will find what you're looking for when you stop seeking it. Like, great. Like,
that's
you know,
great.
I appreciate that. Great. First time. Great. Sometimes when I do it, man, like just nothing.
Yeah.
And like, maybe it's, you know, so I have it in my, I try to keep buckets of like A plus B and like C material. So I keep it in my B. But sometimes when I in the same way, it drives me insane.
Yeah.
It drives me absolutely crazy.
I will hold on to something if it does well, like at a mic or a small scale show, and it does really well once, I'll be like, well, that's in the Netflix special.
Yeah, exactly.
And every other audience will be like, no. And I'm like, but you're so wrong. That one audience that one time in Peoria really liked it. Yeah.
You actually did a joke here at the, because we do shows. Obviously, at the bookstore, we're recording the Symposium Bookstore in Hoboken.
Yeah,
check it out.
You come. It's an awesome, awesome show.
Thanks, dude. That means the world. And Dave, headline, sometimes it's amazing. And I don't mean to put your whole act out there, but oh my God, you did this joke about how fast food places, I think it was Taco Bell and like Chipotle, have like different health things on like their baggage or something. It was like Taco Bell had like a rocket or something on their bag. Maybe I'm misremembering.
I'm trying to remember that.
It was something with an avocado on the healthy bag. It was like, oh my goodness.
I don't remember that one. No,
oh
yeah.
My goodness. I'll try and find it for you because I was crying and I still think about that joke. It was so, so funny.
Yeah.
But okay. So now you discover stand-up in LA. Yeah, yeah.
So I discover stand-up and slowly it starts to like, God, those first, you do a mic, you drive an hour to a coffee shop going over your set in your head.
Mm-hmm.
You bomb, and you drive back listening to it, going like, that went great. and then you would do it once a month and be like, I'm a comedian now, you know, losing everything you gained. I never took a class. I never did like or read the book or anything where I got the information that you're supposed to commit and really like hunker down and just every night, get up. Stage time. I thought it was literally like a play. I thought it was a monologue. And
that's interesting. Wow.
I came from a theater background, so I thought, like, as long as I have it memorized, that's it. And so didn't really commit in L.A., but then Stephen Merchant, who I love, a co-writer of the original Office, love his stuff, was doing his Hello Ladies tour in one town in America, and it was in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And so I bought a ticket to go to New York just to see Stephen Merchant stand up.
Wow. Oh my God.
And I came to New York and I walked off, and I had visited New York before, but I just got off the subway and I was like, Oh man, this feels more like home in 10 seconds than 10 years in LA.
That's crazy.
And I just made the choice and was like, stand up. This is where stand up is. This is where all of the people who I want to be around are. I love this energy. I love the fact that you can jump from spot to spot and see the whole city in the amount of time it takes you to just merge onto the 405 in LA. You can see the entire city of New York.
I grew up on Long Island. That's where I'm from originally. And I like to think, I had this thought and I really liked it. I think I was born on Long Island because I don't think I would ever have the courage to move to New York to pursue comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of little universe thing I say to myself. I cannot imagine people who hold LA over New York. I'm sorry, I don't get it. There is nowhere, like, especially for comedy.
I think they're more patient because there's the art scene, but you got to
go.
You got to really find it.
Yeah.
I'm lazy. Like, I want to walk out of the subway stop and see culture and have it hit me in the face. And mm-hmm. New York will do that. Oh, there's the best jazz club in the United States right there.
Yeah.
Cool. Oh, there's, you know, and with LA, it's more like, no. You go here. You get off here, you go there.
Yeah.
You go around the cul-de-sac, mm-hmm. and there's a little black box theater that's really, you know, like, it's there.
Totally.
But it's so fragmented, and there's no personality to the city, and there's no camaraderie.
Yeah.
I was living in L.A. when there was something called Carmageddon, which was happening, which was the 405 and the 101 were, like, the two biggest highways in Hollywood and in the L.A. area, and they were both going to be shut down for construction or something, and it was we knew it was coming like days in advance, and everyone was like, it's gonna be Carmageddon, it's gonna be gridlock traffic, and I remember, like, there was no, like, we'll get through this. It was just anger because everyone was like, oh no. But if something like that happened in New York, you feel like we all get together and we all, like, the surge pricing, like, we all talk about it. And it's also now we have social media with TikTok and everything where everybody's giving their two cents. But the city feels like a friend in New York.
Yeah.
In LA, it feels like a work acquaintance.
That is a really great way to put it. I love that. And also, you know, because it is so, it's so tough here.
Yeah.
That, like, it's almost, it feels that way, like, out of necessity. I like that a lot.
Dude. Yeah.
So now you go to see Stephen Merchant's show, and then you decide to move to New York from that to pursue stand-up.
I came back to L.A., and I was like, all right, here we go. And I kept thinking about New York, and then eventually was just like, nah, gotta do it, gotta try it. And moved to New York, and immediately recognize the energy and the flow of the city that stand up is like something that you can't just half-ass and you have to pursue it, and then immediately started to hunker down. So I don't even really, like, I started stand up in 2012, but I don't really think about me, like, actually starting it until I got to New York and was doing mics every night.
Yeah.
And then it just, you know.
And then it just took off.
Yeah.
And then, okay, because I'm just checking on time here because I want to be respectful to the bookstore owner. No, of course. But, and then when did you start? Because, and I want to be very clear, Dave, your stand-up is incredible, but you also have this incredible social media presence. And through all these different things that you do, like, I think we mentioned News O'Clock and the Republican field goal posts. And I love watching what you do on social media. And it just seems like you are constantly writing and putting out content. You do the Jordan Peterson with his wife.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's so funny how, like, I appreciate that. It's kind, but it's so funny how, like, there's flow to it. Like, my Tucker Carlson used to be what everybody knew me for.
Oh, that's interesting.
And
wow.
He got fired from Fox News, so I stopped doing the impression, and those videos just disappear. And then I do a Jordan Peterson, and it's like, you're the Jordan Peterson guy.
Yeah,
and it's like, It's so funny. And but that's part of it is like you don't want to be like whatever it is, the first thing that you do that gets a million views.
Yes.
You don't want to just be that.
Absolutely.
After COVID, my wife and I started to like just like we were like, ugh, are we too old for TikTok? Let's give it a shot. And
I want to pause for a second just in case someone's listening and like thinking about pursuing something. Two people who are hilarious on TikTok had the thought before they got started, are we too old for this?
Oh, yeah.
That is shocking to me, seeing you guys, because it's amazing what you guys do on there.
I appreciate that.
Yeah,
that's
of course.
But it's all like if you don't know, before you know what TikTok is and before you get on it and you see that there is like an algorithm for everybody.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying.
If you want TikTok to just be like coin collecting and crocheting, that can be your For You page. It's not just dance. It's whatever it is that you want it to be.
Right.
But we didn't know that at the time. So it's so funny, like our first videos of like us trying to figure out the form and how to do it and everything. But we live in a beautiful townhouse that has a studio that we've renovated. We got a green screen. We've got a podcast studio. We have all and we slowly started gathering equipment. So we have all of the stuff there. And it's interesting. I did a sketch recently that had a thing where I kind of talk about within the sketch. I'm like, how much does this pay? And someone made a comment where they're like, oh, so you only do this for money?
Ugh.
And it's like, yeah, kind of like I'm lying. Would I be as prolific on social media if I didn't get lucky enough to have something hit and make money?
Mm-hmm.
I probably would have quit a long time ago. It is done a much more modest version of it. But you start it, you try to figure it out, you're throwing everything at the wall, and then something hits and you make like 5 cents and you're like, okay, that's enough to make me wake up tomorrow to write something to do again. And then it makes a little bit more money. And you're like, great, this is like actually starting to supplement my like the things that I'm doing that I don't care about. Like if I can just do sketches. And so, no, it's not all about money and it's not all about that. But like the fact that it can actually start supporting you and actually pay off financially and justify the power you're using and the camera you just bought and it's our generation's like a garage with, you know, two dads looking at talking about lawn equipment or like, oh, that's your new Chevy. Like our generation of that is like, ooh, what equipment do you have? Like, what
Dave, I love that.
Do you
that's
know what
really,
I mean?
Totally.
Like, what are you using? Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's
you
like, know, yeah. Because I've got to ask about these cameras as well, which I really
yeah,
like.
Yeah,
like, that's
oh,
a really
that's
good
it.
Point.
That's what we do now.
Yeah.
So the social media, like I wish I could say like, man, I just felt this wave of creativity. But no, it was the right combination of creativity, and I had the time to try these things. A lot of it wasn't good. A lot of it bombed. But then slowly you start to figure out, like, you have something that goes viral, and you're like, what did I do in that sketch that I didn't do in the 30 before that?
Mm-hmm.
Let me do that again. And then they start paying you for it, and you're like, great. Now let me maintain. And then it becomes the job of maintain your sanity.
Yes.
Because I could just do Jordan Peterson sketches every single day for the rest of my life. I'm not inspired by that.
Totally. Yeah.
So I'll do the Jordan Peterson sketch to pay the rent and then kind of like, well, what do I want to do today? What do I want to do today? And
it's the same way when you see these actors that are in these like big budget studio movies,
mm-hmm.
like not to pick on her because I think she's brilliant, but I think Florence Pugh is in this new Marvel movie.
Yeah.
Thunderbolts. Yeah. Thank you. So I'm sure that whatever paycheck she's making from there is going to supplement her so that when she sees a project that she really wants to do that's like indie and doesn't pay well, she can afford to do that. It's the same way you do those to not only obviously express yourself artistically, but so you can also experiment and go the other way with some stuff.
Yeah. And it's tough because there's a lot of people out there who are still trying to figure it out and they haven't quite hit it yet. Like I'm here talking about like when you have something do well, my level compared to some of my friends and what they're doing is like, I can't even begin to figure out how well they have mastered the art of what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And I'm nowhere near that. And there's people underneath who are like still trying to get that first thing that goes viral.
Yeah.
It really just is about consistency. And
well, and that's like what I'm learning as well. And I'm actually glad we're having this conversation because I just posted something that bombed. And I'm like, you know, when you hit some of those streaks where you're just like nothing, I spent 3 hours writing something today and nothing was hitting. And I just ended up putting something up just to say that I could have something go up today. Mm-hmm. Just completely bombed. And it really is, to your point, just about consistency and just try. When I try to remember that it's like, okay, I'm just trying this.
Yeah.
This isn't my magnum opus. Am I saying that right?
Yeah.
It's like, if I'm saying that wrong, that's going to look sound really dumb.
You'll change it in post.
Yeah, exactly.
Just have the, like, your coffee over. Just you know, magnum opus. Yeah.
I love the cheesy voiceover.
Yeah.
But to that point, yeah, it's just like, I'm just trying, because you do have, when you post, that feeling like everybody's seeing this. Oh my God, everybody's going to remember. And then nobody cares,
but
man.
There's also the cockiness, because you've had stuff that's like really hit.
Sure,
I've seen some of your stuff, and I'm like, oh, thank God. Like, I'm so happy for you when
thanks,
I see
Dave,
something. Because there's times where I'm like, you know, oh, I'll give it a like. Oh, already 90,000 people have liked it. Okay, I'll add mine to that.
Yeah.
It's so nice. But like, do you ever have something that like will hit? Like my Republican goalpost.
Yeah,
I'm very proud of it. I love doing it. I had one that hit like 1.5 million. And so I'm like, I'll do the follow-up. And let me just write it out here. And yeah, that's pretty good script. And here comes the follow-up to the one that got a million views. And it gets like 5,000 views.
Yeah, man. It's just...
And it's so humbling.
Oh.
Because you're like, okay, maybe it wasn't as good. Was it 20,000 times as bad?
Yeah.
Like, did my writing get 20,000 times worse? Or is the algorithm a fickle mistress?
100%. You know? And it reminds me of a story. I think Mark Norman tells a story where he played, I think it was either the Beacon Theater or like some huge venue. I know they're not comparable, but he played like MSG or the Beacon Theater, some huge venue in New York City. Killed, did amazing. And then he goes, all right, I'm going to do this bar show after for 20 people. And he goes, I ate it.
Yeah.
But it's good that comedy is so humbling because it keeps you on your toes.
I love that about stand-up because you need that. You need that so much.
Yeah.
That, like, when you do really, really well in a big room, I think I was hosting for some a big name at Caroline's. Packed room, packed crowd every night.
Yeah.
My setups were getting applause breaks.
That's amazing.
And then the next night, bar show where the TV is more interesting than me, and nobody's like this is the way people are sitting, like 90% of them, and you're just like,
oh,
it's beautiful. It's beautiful that brings you back to earth.
100%. And I just, Dave, this has been such a wonderful conversation. I do. So you're doing incredible now.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Of course. And there are two things I want to ask you about, just in case someone is going through something similar. I mean, what is something you would tell either your younger self who lost their mother or someone who's maybe dealing with a sick parent now?
Loss and losing a parent and losing, you know, the thing that I cared about the most was taken from me.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I loved the most, if you had asked me, like, what do you need the most, is the thing that I lost. It is not easy, and everybody's experience is different. There's been times where, like, I've been in a situation where somebody lost, like, a relative or their mom, and someone has been like, hey, Dave, you should like talk to them and like, you know, you've been through this. And I'm like, literally the only thing I can say is that everybody's experience is different.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody processes it differently. The whole never goes away. Human beings are malleable and it doesn't feel like it, but you will be able to live and grow and create and build off of even the worst loss you can possibly imagine. Even if something that feels, you know this feeling where it's like where you are 5 years from now, where you were 5 years ago, your life can change in an instant for the better.
Mm-hmm.
Things can get better. You can find the right person. You can find the right city. So wherever you're at, whatever you're feeling, feel your feelings, process your feelings, live with it, be sad, it's okay. Surround yourself with people who will give you patience. And honestly, the only thing that I ever want is to talk about my mom, because my mom was a single mom. So a lot, she never really had a lot of friends or did a lot of stuff. So like, I feel like the custodian of all of our memories, because I'm the only one left who shared all of these fun little, boring to anybody else, but like mean the world to me stories. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the advice I would give to somebody, like if you have a friend or a loved one who's just lost somebody, is just like let them talk about that person.
Yeah.
Because that, let them like relive the memories that now only they have. It's everything.
And I love that you said that, because I think oftentimes if I'm with someone who has gone through a really harrowing loss, I, as a friend, will think, okay, let me tread lightly because I don't want to trigger them or say something. But to your point, a lot of times that's what they need, is to talk about it and voice, you know, feelings about it. And I do just want to point out, I think it's so beautiful that your mom raised you on stand-up, and here you are bringing joy to so many people through your act and what you do. That's really, really beautiful, Dave.
Thank you.
Of course.
And it's sad that she never got to see me do it.
I was thinking that, yeah.
But I'm up there every time trying to make her proud, because she was just such a goofball.
I love that so much.
Goofball.
Do you have any fun stories of when she was a goofball?
I mean, like every
you're
every
like how
moment,
much you're like, is this the end of the pod?
Yeah, I know, like, well, that'll be the sequel, you know. No, she's just she did not waste a minute taking anything too seriously. Yeah. It was always laughing. She always had a beer in her hand, sitting down, watching Richard Jenny, Paula Poundstone, Marc Maron, just all of the classics. Mm-hmm. She would wake me up in the morning with like Premium Blend on TV.
That's awesome.
I woke up in the morning to stand up.
Wow.
Every morning. Yeah.
Dave, if there is not a more obvious sign in the universe that yeah. you should be pursuing.
Why did it take me so long?
And you're like, I'm going to be an actor. And the universe is like, all right, we'll give him a few years yeah. and then redirect
him. I wish I could
him.
Have seen me at that coffee shop watching that open mic going like, oh, all right. Okay.
And then very much in that same vein, this is the other thing I wanted to talk mm-hmm. about. If someone's right now living on their friend's couch pursuing something artistically, what do you have to say to them?
Like, do what you need to do to get into the headspace where you fall in love with the process to get you where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
Not the destination.
Yeah.
Don't focus so much on the destination that you just get frustrated. Learn to love the process. If you want to do stand-up comedy, it's open mics every night. It's bombing. Get used to loving that. The editing, the going in. It didn't work tonight. I'm going to come in with a different version of it tomorrow
yeah.
night. Fall in love with that,
mm-hmm.
and you're great. If it's acting, fall in love with getting new headshots, with driving to auditions, with talking to your friends about it. The climbing the ladder is your life. You like I'm not one of these spiritual people who thinks like, you know, everybody will win. You may not. it doesn't. I'm 41. Yeah. A lot of my peers are way ahead of where I am, and I'm still kind of like, hey, I'll get there. Like, it may not happen, so you might as well fall in love with the process of working towards it,
mm-hmm.
because that's what your life is going to be.
Yeah.
So yeah, again, feel your feelings, process what you need to. But if you're living on a couch and you have a dream and there's something you want to do, there's no excuse why you can't watch a YouTube video, why you can't go online and figure out what your next steps are.
Yeah.
And fall in love with every step of that way and just do
it. And that's yeah. even, I love hearing that, because that's something I need to hear, especially right now, because I've just been so focused on, to your point, the destinations, the where I want to end up and stuff like that, where it's, you know, you got to remember why you're doing it in the first place.
Yeah.
Right. Is that it brings you so much joy and all that. Dave, this is incredible.
This
Dave,
so
tell the
fun.
People where they can follow
Yay!
You.
DVD Columbo on Instagram. I did not get Dave Columbo on Instagram. That's,
you didn't?
That's a different guy who's tried to sell me the name.
Ugh.
He's like, because he's now all these people are like following him thinking
yeah, yeah.
it's me.
Okay.
And he's like, I'll sell it to you. And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
DVD Columbo on Instagram, but Dave Columbo everywhere else. And my podcast, Off the Mark, Good Chat on Bad Takes of Great Movies. We have a blast, and we got to have you back on that.
I had so much fun. I listened to our episode. We do The Godfather. It was really fun.
Yeah, it was great.
It was really fun.
But yeah, DaveColombo.com. As long as TikTok is around, that's where I post kind of most primarily. And yeah, that's where.
Dave, thank you so much for
this
coming on.
Thank
I
you
had so much,
much
fun. And yeah. Here's to hoping we left you a little higher. Thank you guys so much. Dave, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Oh, that was awesome. That was